Now, migration numbers have returned to pre-COVID levels. According to Stats NZ estimates released, New Zealand had a net migration gain of 65,400 people for the March 2023 year. In the month of March alone, 21,400 migrants arrived, the biggest monthly arrivals estimate ever, and the net gain was 12,100. Professor Paul Spoonley is Distinguished Professor Emeritus and Honorary Research Associate in the College of Humanities and Social Sciences at NASA University. He says other similar countries, such as Canada, are being much more strategic about where arrivals go, with provinces recruiting to their needs. So what is happening here? Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Catherine.
That's quite a number. If you were to annualise that net gain in March, we'd be absolutely at record levels. We'd be over 100,000. Now, that won't necessarily happen, but it's indicative that we're back into big numbers at the moment.
Yeah, and what I did in preparation for this was I looked at the forecast from earlier in the year, and almost universally, the sort of, I don't wish to pick on bank economists, but some of the op-ed writers were all saying doom and gloom. We weren't getting migrants. And in a space of 2 to 3 months, we're back into that territory that we saw prior to to COVID lockdown. So we're back. I mean, supercharged migration, the numbers that you've talked about are very high. They're high compared to what we have seen traditionally, but they're right back at that November, December 2019 figures. So as high as we've ever seen them.
Look, it's interesting because before COVID, part of the government's policy was its future of work approach. What it was talking about with respect to migration was much, much more targeted. It wanted businesses to upgrade, improve technology. It wanted higher paying jobs and less of a dependence, perhaps, on migrant workers. Things have changed a lot in the 3 years since, right? We've got an incredibly tight labour market, and also, we should say, it's a net figure. There's anecdotal evidence anyway that there's plenty of people leaving, Paul.
Yes, there are. And what we need to look at is the net loss of New Zealanders. So over the last 23 years, since 2000, every year we've seen a net loss. At the moment, that net loss of New Zealanders is running at 17,000. However, and that sounds quite a dramatic figure. However, if you compare it to the years under the John Key government of 2011, 12 and 13, during those years, the net loss of New Zealanders was 44,000. And I think we're all waiting to see how high will that net loss go. Will it go as high as it did in those 3 years, or will it stabilise around the figure that we're seeing at the moment, say 17 to 20,000? The other thing I would say in terms of those March figures that you talked about, I do think there's a rebound. I do think for two reasons we're seeing a spike, because Immigration New Zealand was not really processing many migrant applications, and so there's been a bit of a backlog. And of course, remember that we had over 200,000 temporary residents who applied to become permanent residents, and they had to be dealt with. And I think also probably migrants were sitting and waiting, you know, applicants were sitting and waiting and wondering, you know, what's going to happen as we come out of COVID. And so they've now made the choice to apply, and you can see those numbers. I think the March numbers are probably going to be a high for the year, and it will stabilise. I would be very surprised if it hit that 100,000 figure.
All right, then that's what we wait to see, of course, how it settles and where does it settle.
Indeed.
Look, there's also, the reasons for migration, why a country wants migration and what kind of migration. When we talk about what kind of migration, we're typically talking about the jobs that people do and the contribution they can make economically. We talk about that perhaps more than we think about what they can add socially or anything else. But these are matters that governments and institutions think about. What was the Productivity Commission's report last year? What did it say about migration as a policy?
Well, it's quite interesting because what they focused on were things like absorptive capacity. What that means is, what number of migrants can you bring into the country so that it doesn't overload demand, let's say, for housing? So the absorptive capacity is the ability to provide infrastructure. And I reread the Productivity Commission's report, and they're talking about a $104 billion deficit in terms of the provision of infrastructure and services in New Zealand. And always the paradox is that those migrants come in to help in terms of our labour market, as you've correctly said, but they also, of course, add to demand. So the question is whether we can neutralise that. And I see the bank economists have been talking about the contribution of that demand to things like inflation, for example. What the government have already signalled is a, what's called a GPS, a general policy statement, which was one of the recommendations of the Productivity Commission, to make policy around immigration much more transparent. So what are our goals? What are our priorities? How do we manage demand and supply? And how do we manage that absorptive capacity issue? So that's one thing. The other thing is MB on their website have indicated that they are going to change some of the settings, and in terms of the skilled migrant setting and in terms of the employer, they're going to add new skill factors and they're going to target the higher skilled workers. And they've got a very precise figure. They say that the applications in those categories will go down by 26%. But they also add that the number of migrants who are here on temporary visas, and that's two-thirds, by the way, that inflow, two-thirds of that inflow are here, have come here on temporary work and study visas, that we'll see more of them moving from a temporary status to a permanent status. So there are some policy changes that are on the horizon, but what concerns me is we've got back to this very high numbers without actually thinking through the Productivity Commission recommendations.
Look, the inflation is one thing, and it may be a short-term impact, but at a time where another institution is busy trying to crank us towards a recession to come, or to, you know, just cool the economy, more people coming, they need a place to stay, they need food to eat, they need transport, etc. The other one is housing, because that was what caused such pain. If we go back to the last peak, I think it was 2017, it was during the John Key National Government, 70,000, I think, the net figure. And headline GDP roars along, right? GDP per capita, I don't think, moved a bit, but certainly not at the headline rates. And that's probably the truer figure in some ways of the economic measure of what's happening in an economy. But also we had house prices double, and they had already doubled previously under Labor as well. And we were in the situation of more and more people coming in, and we weren't building enough houses. Paul, the house building has picked up, whether you're talking about individual units, it's picked up. But the worry at the moment is there's a heck of a lot of building consents that may not be turned into new dwellings with the downturn. And is anybody tracking how we are matching that supply and demand?
Yes, there are. And I think what we should look at is some of the Treasury forecasts, the Reserve Bank forecasts. The Productivity Commission is doing some good work in this space as well. And then some of the private commentators. And I think we're all waiting to see what exactly that demand looks like. Because when you look at an economy like Auckland and a housing market like Auckland, what you notice is that we are selecting high income or high capital migrants who've come in, and they are paying quite a bit more than you would expect a local to pay for one-off purchases like housing or cars or whiteware. So there is no doubt that that demand is very significant and will go up significantly, particularly for the permanent residents. Remember that the temporary residents, probably not, but the permanent residents, definitely. The Productivity Commission did do some work, which is contrary to a statement that New Zealand First made the other day, that that these migrants will drive wages down. The Productivity Commission did say that there wasn't evidence of displacing New Zealand workers or of driving wages down. There were, if anything, there was a small positive gain from the arrival of migrant workers. So it rather depends on which sector we're talking about and what that supply-demand dynamic looks like.
Yeah, the real issue at the moment with the new bills, which had been happening at record levels and certainly consents were coming in at near record levels, is whether that house building or unit building, multi-unit building, is going to be realised. Very interesting stuff. You mentioned the students. This had been another significant contributor towards particularly the university's incomes. And we know at the moment they're all going through their own challenges, including job cuts being proposed as they try and balance budgets. Are we seeing much of a return of students to the market? Certainly not in the numbers the universities had hoped for.
No, not at all. So the pre-COVID numbers on student visa visas was 90,000, nearly 90,000. So we're not seeing anything like that at the moment, a small fraction really of it. It looks like it's going to grow as particularly the Chinese market kicks back in. So remember, the Chinese have been taken out of both the migrant and student movement factors. So they will kick back in. But if you look at the numbers, what's really interesting is that as migration kicks back in, it's the Indians which are dominating. So both the Indians from India, but also Fiji's providing quite a significant number of migrants. So it tends to go India as a source country, the Philippines, and then China. And I suspect through this year, China will kick back in and be quite an important contributor, particularly of students.
You mentioned the fact that you're worried the Productivity Commission report might be now being overlooked, as obviously there's been, you know, we've had whole industries just screaming for workers, including the likes of hospitality and others, but just about every industry, right, construction and on. Remind us of what the key principles ought to be, I guess, around a good migration policy that takes into account the pros and cons we've just been discussing, or at least tries to manage them.
Yeah. And I think the Productivity Commission and this general, I've completely forgotten what it's called now, the general policy statement should make that alignment, particularly to need in the New Zealand labour market, more clear. So we do have some issues around aligning or matching that demand. And by the way, in terms of the people that are coming in, construction has been the big winner. They dominate in terms of the visa numbers coming into the country. Hospitality is second, transport third, and agriculture is fourth. What we're missing out of that are some of the professions like healthcare and teachers. So the target that was set for teachers was over 700, and we've had barely half of the visas allocated to teachers. The other thing that I think is missing is the regional component. So what's interesting about Canada and Australia, both of whom have named quite significant targets for this year, Canada's is over 500,000, although when you look at the per capita, we're exactly the same as Canada in terms of permanent resident arrivals, by the way, and we're about 25% ahead of Australia. But both Canada and Australia, the dominant visa category now is a regional or provincial visa category. So each of the states in Australia, each of the provinces in Canada has their own immigration policy. They select their own immigrants, and those immigrants that go to that particular state according to local need both now dominate the visa arrivals for both Australia and Canada. And we have really nothing like that in New Zealand. So, you know, those regions that are really struggling at the moment, you know, what would they gain from having immigrants? What sort of immigrants do they want? And then giving them a role in terms of immigrant recruitment and selection, which is the gap between us and Canada and Australia at the moment.
The other thing, of course, that we saw with COVID was not just the complete cessation of inward migration, but also big changes in the labour market. And that's really becoming evident in the rearview mirror, right?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, if you look at where the job gains, because there were quite significant job gains, even through COVID, where the job gains were and where the job losses were. I mean, you've got to say that tourism, hospitality are sectors which have declined significantly in terms of the numbers employed. They are growing again, but, you know, you just wonder what that tourism number will look like at the end of the day, both in terms of the numbers coming on shore, but also in terms of the industry itself. Whereas healthcare has grown quite significantly. I was looking at the number of doctors registered in New Zealand, and it is, over the last 10 years, it's grown very significantly. But the gap is quite severe, and New Zealand in terms of the OECD and in terms of doctors has the largest reliance on overseas trained doctors. It's almost double what the US is. And we've got to sort that out. And the Productivity Commission also said, if you're bringing in immigrants when you should be training local people, or you should be investing in new technology, then we're probably doing the wrong thing. And I'm not sure we've had that debate yet, and I'm not sure we've got the right policy settings on why we would invest in technology as opposed to bringing a migrant into New Zealand.
That's what, as I said, that's what the incumbent government's policy was pre-COVID. Its future of work policy was all about this. It was about incentivising companies to invest in new technology. It was about trying to push up wage rates by not having, a tap of workers by which you could, it is argued, suppress wages. But the pandemic has sort of, done what it's done, and we've had businesses left screaming and still screaming for workers.
If you think back through those 21, 22 years, the message was, we don't have workers, we don't have migrants, and we are suffering big time. What's interesting, though, at this point in the election campaign, and I do think we are in an election campaign, migration does not seem to be an issue. It seems to have been displaced by, for example, the Treaty Tatariti, and you look at that David Seymour speech at the weekend by bilingual signs and things like co-governance. Apart from New Zealand First, I've looked at the website, there doesn't appear to be much enthusiasm for making it a major election issue. I mean, National Back on Track have got we need to fix our broken immigration system, but they don't actually say what that is or what they propose. So it's going to be interesting to see whether the sorts of issues that you've now raised are going to become part of a 2023 election campaign.
Look, it is interesting, but when you have a large number of employers saying we're desperate for workers, you might strategically revisit whether you want to target migration as a policy, right?
Yes, indeed.
Which is not that I, not that I want to get inside the heads of politicians, but one would think.
Yes,
Paul,
indeed.
Thanks very much. Paul Spoonley is professor. He's Distinguished Professor Emeritus and Honorary Research Associate at the College of Humanities and Social Sciences at Massey University.